Can you believe that movie was 1978? I mean, isn't that just crazy? Timeless, though, and if that song gets stuck in your head, you're the one that I want, that's just my Mother's Day gift to all of you, and it was actually sort of a communication device, because my hope is that, like, when it's Wednesday and that song is still in your head, my hope is that you'll remember back to the heart of the message, and so that does kind of come at the heart of the message. We'll get to that in a little bit about it, and moving on. So we're going to be talking this morning about love and the nature of love. And of course, in that clip from Grease, you've got this situation where there's this ooey-gooey kind of love. And she basically says, you better shape up. And you know, when we're in love with somebody, it motivates us to change. And what we're going to see this morning is that early on, love is very easy. And we're motivated to change early on. But as time goes on, it gets a little bit harder, doesn't it? And what we're kind of looking at with love is whenever you have any two objects, now we're just kind of move away from personal relationship, any two objects, this is a law of nature. Whenever two objects are in motion and touching each other, there's friction. I mean, if you just take your hands and you rub them together, two objects, doesn't matter what they are, could be human flesh, could be anything, could be emotions, could be people, could be just two inanimate objects. Whenever you put them together and they're in motion, there's friction there. And friction creates tension, it creates heat, and it's a problem. And so from the beginning of time, we've been trying to find ways to reduce friction. Whenever there's an issue, you know, issue with friction and we want the movement to go smoothly, we find a way around that friction. I mean, that's, after all, why we created simple machines. That's what wheels are. You know, people got tired of dragging stuff on the ground and eventually realized, you know, if I just had a wheel, that would reduce the friction between this object and the ground, and it would go better. So some of y'all, I didn't even realize that was a friction-reducing object. Other times, we want to put some sort of substance on it. You put something on there like grease or some sort of lotion, and it reduces the friction between the two things and allows things to rub smoothly along so things go along better. And in personal relationships, it's the same way. Whenever you have two people that come together and they're in close contact with each other, there's going to be friction, if for no other reason than the fact that we're all sinners. And our sin creates friction in relationships. We have different wants, different desires, different personality types. That creates friction in relationships. And this goes for every kind of relationship. It's universal. It doesn't matter. This happens in dating relationships, husband-wife relationships, parent-children relationships, people you work with, people you go to school with, people you're teaching, just friends, strangers, acquaintances, anybody. Anytime two people are coming together, there's going to be friction there. And as the friction increases in the relationship, we try to do things to reduce the friction in that relationship. That's kind of what we do in the nature of it. Because after all, whenever you have friction in a relationship, it's kind of like fingernails on a chalkboard. And that sound comes because there is friction between the fingernails and the chalkboard. And so we're trying to do things to reduce the friction, so it'd be more like smooth sailing, more like a boat on the water in that relationship. And whenever you have something or you're dealing with somebody, this could be somebody you're married to, somebody you're dating, could be one of your kids, could be somebody you work with at the office, where the friction gets so bad that the heat rises so much that you just can't stand it anymore, you do something to try to reduce that friction. You're looking for that wheel. You're looking for that grease, something that can make this relationship work better. And quite often where we start in this area is with words. We think to ourselves, well, I just need to sit down and have a talk with them, right? I mean, after all, talking with everybody else isn't going to solve it. If I just sit down with them and talk with them about their behavior, their actions, what's going on, if we can just kind of talk this out, we can work this out. Anybody? You know, this is, makes sense, right? I mean, this, after all, sounds like a good idea. So we sit down, we talk with them, and oftentimes what we find is even after a really good talk, it doesn't work. You come back the next day at work, and there's still problems. You sit your teenager down, you have a talk about their behavior, and tomorrow it's no different. You and your husband, you sit down, you have a talk, and tomorrow it's no different. So you think to yourself, well, maybe I just don't know the right words to say. Maybe I need to get some more training in this. And so maybe you go out and you read a book. Maybe you pick up 5 Love Languages of Children. By the way, this guy has gravy trained this for every single relationship out there because it's true. It works. These are universal. There's 5 love languages in marriage. There's 5 love languages for singles. There's 5 love languages in the workplace. There's 5 love languages for children. I'm trying to figure out, are there any other relationships that this guy can gravy train these principles on? But I will tell you, I've read 3 of the books. Each one is different, and each one is good. So I'll give the guy credit, Gary Chapman, because this stuff's foundational, and we'll get to that in a minute. But maybe what you do is you say, well, if I want a better marriage, I'm going to find some more principles, and maybe I can sit down with my husband and I, we can talk about this, and we can share this, and maybe that will get him to change. If he just knows a little bit more about marriage or relationships, maybe that will work, and you find that that doesn't even work. And so when the context of the relationship or the content of the conversation doesn't work, sometimes you move from content to style. And you think, maybe if I just say it differently, maybe the way I'm saying it, because what we have maybe is a failure to communicate. So if I can just speak on his level, then maybe he'll understand. Maybe if I can just use some sports analogies, then he'll understand. Maybe if I can just maybe use some movies like Grease when I'm talking to her and use some of those analogies, that will work. Like maybe if I use some Kardashian illustrations that... No, I don't really think that any of those will work. And if any of you guys know any of them, I got... Just leave your man card. I won't even go down that road. So sometimes we think, you know, maybe it's the way I'm saying it. So we try to say it differently, and we find that doesn't seem to reduce the friction relationship. And when all the words fail, we move to the next thing, and that is sometimes we just think, well, maybe if I just start praying about it, maybe that will work. And so you move from maybe talking to them, and maybe what I need in this relationship, maybe to reduce the friction, I just need to pray about it. Because God can do anything through prayer. And you read in Scripture about how God can move mountains if you pray hard enough. And so you begin to commit to pray for your child. How many of y'all prayed for your kids? How many of y'all prayed for your kids when nothing else worked? And it happens in relationships. When nothing else works, we go to prayer. I've often said is that, you know, usually impossible situations are what drive us to pray. I say if it wasn't easy, we wouldn't need God. And so oftentimes these things, these obstacles that come up are just things that drive us to our knees to pray more. And so we begin to commit to pray, whether it's praying for our relationships, praying for our kids, praying for people at work. I mean, I prayed for somebody at work, either that God would take them out or change them, right? It's a little different when you're a pastor, because I'm actually praying that God might take some of you out. But actually, I've never done that in this church, honest to God. I've never prayed that in this church. But man, in my last church I was at in Florida, golly days, there was a lady who had great-great-grandkids. And she was the meanest, orneriest old lady in the world. And all I could think of was God was kept giving this lady enough grace so that one day she'd get it right so she didn't have to suffer an eternity apart from him. Like all the good people in the church would die. Not this lady. She was like a cockroach. Anyways, I digress. Just being real, right? So we go to pray. Or maybe we think to ourselves, well, I need to pray and I need to get them to church. Because if they could just hear these messages about love, that would change them. So if I could just get them right with God like I'm getting right with God, then that would reduce the friction of relationship and everything would be better. But sometimes that doesn't even work. And so when that doesn't work, we think to ourselves, well, I just need to go the extra mile. I just need to be the bigger person. I just need to make up for their shortcomings. I just need to go a little bit further and farther. And if they're not going to do it, then I'll do it for them. If I can't get them to pick up their clothes off the floor, I'll pick it up for them. And by the way, that's in part why we honor you mothers here today, is because that is the heart of a mother, is it not? I mean, that's really the fiber of a mother that we look at, that we all respect, we all admire. We just take one step back and go, dang, nobody does it like mom does. I mean, seriously, because moms are all about going the extra mile. When the kids don't do what they're supposed to do, they go the extra mile. When dad doesn't do what he's supposed to do, moms go the extra mile. They're always about always filling in that gap. So what we do in return is we honor you for one day, and we do it all for you one day, right? And it's a decent trade-off. We give you one, you give us 364. But that's the nature of motherhood. We go the extra mile. And we basically get to the point where we say, I'm going to make this relationship work even if it kills me. And some of you all have done that in your marriages. Some of you all have done that with a coworker, where you realized it's a government job and they ain't going to get fired from it. You know what I'm talking about. It's a duty station. You're there stuck with it for 2 years and they ain't going to be moved for 2 years. You're not going to move for 2 years. So you got to deal with it. So what do? I'll just be the bigger person. I'll just take on the extra workload. I know if I don't do it, it ain't going to get done. And if I don't do it, it's not going to get done right. So I'll just do it and I'll do it and I'll do it if it kills me. And I'll somehow, some way, make up for all the friction in the relationship. And so we're doing all these things, whether it be the words we say or the way that we say them or what we say, whether it be taking to God in prayer to try to, you know, reduce the friction, going to church, or maybe sometimes it's just becoming almost a martyr in the relationship to the point where it's like, you know, I'll kill myself if that's what it takes to get this relationship to work. And knowing all of this, and that we're searching and seeking for some way to reduce friction in relationships, we read afresh in 1 Corinthians 13. And it's ironic because this is actually a passage that was probably read at many of y'all's weddings, yet you were just so enamored in love that you didn't even pay any attention to what the pastor said. You just, it was like, yeah, that had the word love in it, so it sounds good. So yes, yes, yes. And you're just, he's perfect. She's wonderful. She's perfect. She's wonderful. And then like 2 years later, I as a pastor will go back and say, let's reread this passage that was probably read at your wedding. And note, if you will, the friction in the relationships. And keep that as a context for how you read this, because the Corinthian church had a lot of friction in all their relationships. And Paul says this, 1 Corinthians 13. You know, if I were to speak in the tongues of men or of angels, in other words, if I could like speak as eloquently as anybody ever had, if I could come up with the most creative way to communicate to you, more creative than even an angel of God standing here in your presence could. But don't do it in love. I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. By the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge. In other words, if I've read everything there is to know about this issue, if I knew everything there is to know about marriage, I know everything there is to know about parenting, I know everything there is to know about being a good coworker, being a good leader, being a good father, if I know everything there is to know, but don't have love. Or if I have the faith that can move mountains, and that's where I'm going to church and I'm trusting in God to make a change in this relationship, if I have the kind of faith that can move mountains, but do not have love, I'm nothing. If I were to give everything that I possess to the poor and give my body over to hardship so that I might even boast. In other words, you can look at the way I've acted in the work. You can look at the way that I've done. You can look at everything I've done. You can look at my track record to the point where I can say, listen, if anybody's tried in this relationship, I have. I've given 110%. I've given 150%. I've given all of my percent and all of your percent. I've done everything there is to do. But if I do all of that and don't do it in love, I gain nothing. Or he says, I don't get anywhere. And so what he's basically getting across is this key point. This is why I share this opening clip, is that love is the grease in our relationship. Love is like putting axle grease on your relationship. In other words, you can be doing everything right. You can have the right words and the right knowledge, but if it's not said and communicated in love, it's just more friction. And you can pray with all faith of Jesus Christ, and you can have the kind of faith that the disciples had, that was the kind of faith that can move mountains, but if it's not done in love, there's still going to be friction there. And you could give of yourself more than any other mother has ever given. You could give of yourself more than any other martyr for a cause has ever given themselves. But if it's not done in love, it's going to get you nowhere. And so what he's really trying to get at here is that when you have friction in your relationships, the grease that you need to reduce the friction in this relationship is love. And the hard part is that we get confused because we think because we feel love for somebody that they feel love. In other words, we think because I feel love for you that you feel loved. But it doesn't always work that way, does it? Because you can be doing all kinds of things that you think is showing love, but if they're not receiving it as love, then there's still friction. And it's really frustrating because we get fooled into thinking early on in relationships that there's always going to be a love there. Of course, we know about this in romantic relationships. I mean, when in romantic relationships, at the very beginning, love comes easy. You don't have to work hard. I mean, they know you love them just by the very fact that you return their phone call. Right? I mean, just the very fact that that girl texted you back fills your love tank up. Because we all have emotional love tank, don't we? We all have that point where we feel loved. And when you feel fully loved, that's like your whole body's just greased up. I was going to say like a greased pig running through a crowd. You know, I mean, when your emotional love tank is full, there is very little friction in your relationship, is it? I mean, when you feel fully loved by your spouse or by the person you're dating or by your parents or by your kids, there's very little friction, is there? I mean, love covers a multitude of sins. What's that saying? It's just greased right over it. And so what happens is that early on in the relationship, your emotions fill up your love tank constantly. I mean, just the very fact that they want to be with you, be around you, just in your presence, it fills you up. There's an author who did some intense study on this, Dorothy Tenov, in her book Love and Limerence, The Experience of Being Loved, says the average lifespan of this kind of love is only 2 years. The average lifespan of this kind of love is only 2 years. And so what happens is that this kind of love carries you through your dating, carries you into the I do's, carries you a little bit after the I do's, but somewhere around 2 years, it begins to fade away. And all of a sudden, what came really easy becomes really hard. And the reason why the relationship becomes hard is because there's no more love greasing the wheels of this relationship. Because early on, it was just like there was like this automatic grease injector in your life, right? I mean, it just automatically just injected the grease right in it, and everything was great, everything was wonderful, because your emotions were just fueling everything, and they were just coding every relationship, every talk, everything that was ever said. Even if they criticized you, it just felt loving, didn't it? Oh, you know, he's always getting on me over that. That is just love greasing over everything. 2 years later, without any grease, he's always nagging me about something. She's always on my case. Always getting on me. Friction. There's friction in the relationship. And those words that were once cute are now grating. We even say words that, you know, imply friction. He's grating on me. I just can't. There's a lot of tension here. There's a lot of heat. Why? Because there's no love. It happens the same with kids. I mean, we often think to ourselves that, you know, this will always work with kids. Well, here's the deal with kids. When they're young, they're absolutely helpless. You are literally providing for every single thing the kid needs. And they actually feel pretty loved. I mean, when they need a diaper change and they scream, you're there. When they're hungry and they open their mouth, you feed it. Anything to plug them up, right? You know, start with a bottle, then it's some lollipops, whatever it takes to plug that mouth up, to get them quit crying. You do it, and then, you know, the thing is, the kid feels loved. When you have to get down on your hands and knees and tie their shoes, they feel loved. Now, here's the thing. When they're young, they don't always know to reciprocate. They don't always know how to communicate that, but they feel loved. When you are meeting their every need, they feel loved. But somewhere around age 4 or 5, somewhere between age 4 and 5 and age 10, they become a little more independent. And you know, at age 3, you got to do everything for them. At age 13, they're capable of living on their own without you, aren't they? I mean, just ask them. They'll tell you. They can live on their own without you. They don't need you. And what ends up happening is that the more independent they become, the less opportunities we have to show easy love. And oftentimes, the less they feel loved. And when kids don't feel loved by their parents, and you continue to discipline, it creates friction. There's an old saying that rules without relationship breeds rebellion. And when their love relationship breaks down and you continue to instill the rules and the discipline in the home, it breeds rebellion. Because when a teenager doesn't feel loved by you, they rebel against the rules you lay down for them. However, when they feel loved and accepted, they'll take the discipline. They may not like it. They may rebel against it a little bit, but they'll go along with it. Because at the end of the day, they trust and they know that you love them and you have their best interests in mind. It happens at work. You know, when a coworker knows that you care about them, they'll take correction. And this is really hard because, especially if you're the boss, level one leadership is positional leadership. That's where I'm the boss, everybody has to do what I say, and therefore if I give you an order, you got to do it. That's level one leadership. But if you look at, you know, leadership studies, you look at Maxwell, you move from level one leadership, which is positional leadership, ultimately to the point of influence. And that's where people follow you just because of who you are. And people follow you just because of who you are. Why? Because they know that you love them and you care about them. In other words, when you as an employer are taking care of your employees, in other words, they have health issues and you take care of it. You provide the kind of benefits that they need. You look out for their schedule. You know, there was that day where their kid was sick and they, you know, were kind of in a bind, and you as an employer said, you go on ahead, you go home, I'll take care of it right now. You can go home, even though you don't have any more sick days left, you don't have any work days, I'll cover for you today, you can work it, you know, make it up on the weekend, whatever. When you do things like that, it endears your employees to you, and all of a sudden, then when you begin to ask them to work that extra Saturday, they willingly do it. Why? Because they feel affirmed and they feel loved. And so love is the grease in all of our relationships, whether it's with kids or whether our spouse or somebody we're dating or even in employees, whether we're at work. Now, here's the hard part. As I said before, just because I love you doesn't mean you feel loved by me. And that's where this book comes in. And this is actually going to be the heart of what we study over the next couple weeks. And maybe you know these love languages, maybe you don't. Either way, I can guarantee you that the way that we will teach them through the series, you'll learn something new. Like I said, this guy's gravy trained this through every single different relationship out there. I've read 3 of the books so far, and it's really neat because I'd only read the marriage one before. Now I've read the one on singles, and I've also read the one on this one right here on parenting. And it's interesting how each of these books nuance the love languages in different contexts. And so over this series, that's what we're going to be seeking to do, is to show you how to use these love languages. So what exactly is a love language? Well, every one of us, somewhere between the ages of 4 and 10, develops a primary love language. Okay? In other words, what that means is that when you love me this way, that's when I feel loved. In other words, you could love me by all the other manners, but I won't feel loved until you love me in the way that it is my primary love language. And what these love languages are, one is very simply words of affirmation. That's just where you say, I love you. You give encouragement. You give support. And you can recognize in some of your kids. Some of your kids will, if you just say, I'm proud of you, that means the world to them. And when you just give them that affirmation and that love, they just feel like they are on the king of the world. They can go accomplish anything. Maybe they've been at a soccer game, and they'll be playing, and they're always looking over for you to go, good job! And as soon as you say good job, it's like they're running, and they get exhausted, and they look over, and you say good job, and they go, and all of a sudden it like invigorates them. It's like they hear the Rocky theme song, and they just go back in, and they're killing it, aren't they? Why? Because their love tank got filled up, and it motivated them to go further and farther than they ever could before. And it's just simple words. So words of affirmation are one. Quality time. That's just where you're spending an undivided, focused attention on them. And this has nothing to do with quality time, right? If this is in your hand, the other person does not feel quality time, do they? Right? Even your kids pick up on this. I'm amazed that at 4 years old, Jameson will go, Dad, put your phone down. Put your phone down. Put your phone, what's he saying? I want quality time. Quality time is time that's focused, spent on them, listening to them. And some of you, either that's, you know, you've seen it in your kids, you've seen that in your spouse. And you know that, you know, sometimes when the friction increases in the relationship, you just need to take an afternoon off. You just need to spend an evening where you don't watch the Knicks-Bulls game. Or is it Heat-Bulls right now? It's Heat-Bulls. I like the Knicks and I like the Heat, sorry. Where you say, you know, I'm not going to watch the playoffs tonight. I'm just going to spend the night with you. Actually, honey, you want to watch the movie Grease? We'll watch it together. They saw me roll my eyes. But you know, just sitting there watching Grease with him instead of watching the Heat Bulls game. That's what they need, and their love tank is filled. And you know, all the words you could say will not mean as much as just sitting with them for an hour, spending that quality time. For other people, it's gifts. And this is where people, it really is the thought that counts. It doesn't matter how much it costs. It just matters the fact that while you were at work and you were on your way home, you were thinking of me and you got that. You went to your craft class and what you thought of was making something for me. And on Mother's Day, don't you get just some of the coolest gifts in the world? And for some of you, if gifts is your primary love language, you'll keep the gifts that your kid give you for years. Years and years and years. I read one on Facebook where somebody gave their mommy a do not disturb sign and said, you can put this on your bedroom or the bathroom. And if you've been a mommy, you know that you need one for the bathroom. Why is it the second you walk in there, it's like a magnet? It's like as if like the siren goes out in the house. Come see mommy, come see mommy, come see mommy. And they don't ever knock, you just got to lock. Physical touch, hugs, back rubs. You know when your kids have physical touch as their love language because they need hugs. They want you just to, Jackson just loves for me just to caress his arm. And they will actually take your hand and say, no, and it's almost like a cat, you know. I'll tell you right where I want you to scratch my back. And, you know, you do that. Right? And, you know, it doesn't have to be just gentle. You know, with some, especially with boys, wrestling around on the ground. That's the physical touch they need just to feel loved. Sometimes that doesn't grow, kids don't grow out of it. Sometimes when they're grown adults, they just want you and their wife to wrestle around with them. Acts of service. Yeah, that is what I meant. And that message will be coming on the last Sunday of the month, so you might want to be here for it. Just saying. By the way, the number one listened to message ever in this church was on that topic. I'm just saying. And then lastly, acts of service. That's just where you cared enough to get up and do something for somebody. This is the kind of person who, you know, it means the world to them. If you're going to get a drink out of the fridge, if you ask, hey, do you want anything? Just little things like that, just where you think enough to do, it could be something small or it could be something huge, like going out and doing yard work for the afternoon for him. It means the world to them. And what he gets across in here is this, is that every one of us has a primary love language. And when somebody speaks your love language, it fills your tank. And you could be doing the other four for them, but if you don't do what's the primary for them, they don't feel loved. And this goes for your spouse, goes for your kids, goes for your coworkers. If you're not speaking their primary love language, they don't feel loved by you. Period. In other words, if their primary love language is words of affirmation, you could get to the office an hour early, do half their work for them, make coffee for them. You could, you know, be there all day for them. You could give them gifts. But if their issue is words and you don't ever compliment them on the job they're doing, they're not going to feel like as if you even care. They're not going to feel affirmed or loved or cared for by you, and they're going to be a disgruntled employee. All because you didn't speak the primary love language. And this goes for where you work. It goes in the home. It goes with spouses, relationships. If you're not giving the primary, here's the problem. We all speak our own primary love language. You know, if yours is service, you're going to be a server. If yours is word, you're going to be a worder. Wordist, linguist. You're going to be very affirming with what you say. But here's the problem. Rarely ever do two people get married who have the same love languages. Rarely ever do all the kids in your household speak the same love language. And so what works for one kid doesn't work for the other. You know, when you go away on a trip, let's just, you know, like I do, if I'm ever gone out of town for more than one night, I always get them a gift. One of my kids, as soon as I walk in the door, what did you get me? The other one, daddy, 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 give me a hug. That's Jewel, by the way. Jewel, I don't even get Jewel gifts anymore half the time. Because she just looks at it, throws it on the ground, hug. You know, that's all she wants. And you know, if I just gave her a hug and walked away, she wouldn't feel like daddy loved her. If I come away home from a trip and I give Jackson a big hug, by the way, as I'm hugging him, he's like looking over my shoulder in the bag. He's actually asking me, what did you give me? I had to have that lesson. Listen, you need to get the hug down before you ask what I got you. I don't get him something. He thinks I didn't think about him when I was out of town. And so you have to become very adept at speaking their primary love language. And when you speak somebody's primary love language, the other four is just like icing on the cake and gravy. That's just like packing on the axle grease deeper and thicker. So that's just kind of a launching point. It's kind of a short message for this morning. When you have friction in your relationships, as you think over this series about all your relationships, not just a dating or a spouse or marriage relationship, but with your children, with people you work with, anybody you come in, any human you come in contact with, the answer for the friction in that relationship is love. And the way that they're going to feel love, the way you grease that relationship, is by the language of love that you communicate to them. And it's not about what you like to communicate, it's about how they like to receive it. And so your goal over the next couple weeks is going to be look at the primary relationships in your life and think about what is their primary love language. Sometimes you can just ask them. Sometimes you got to be more creative, and we'll help you come up with some techniques over the next 5 weeks. With your kids, they're not going to tell you. You got to figure it out. With people you work with, sometimes you just got to figure it out. And so over the next couple weeks, that's where we're going to be going, that you might grease over the relationships that you have with love. We join with me as we close. Father, we come to you this morning, Father, as Christians, and your word says that all people will know that we follow after you as our God by how we love them. And Father, love is not easy. It can be very difficult. And what we're going to see over the next couple of weeks, Father, is that even though I may feel love for someone, even though I may be working to show love for someone, they may not receive that kind of love. So, Father, help me become an expert on love, as your son was an expert on love. Help me find ways to seek out how to truly love those who are in my life. Father, may I look to love to reduce the friction in my relationships more than words, or how I say the words, even more than prayer. For, Father, if I do all those things but do not have love, I'm not going to get anywhere. I'm not going to bring any honor to you. So, Father, may I begin with love and end with love and cover it all in love.